It is Friday, November 2nd, 2018. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On this week's show, starting a somber beginning, right-wing terrorist kills 11 during worship at a Pittsburgh synagogue, the deadliest attack on Jews in American history. Trump spins a lie about the New York Stock Exchange and 9/11 in order to justify holding a political rally the same day as the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy deletes an anti-Semitic dog whistle tweet saying three wealthy Jews were trying to buy the election, hitting all the globalist wink-wink themes. Trump heats up the anti-immigrant flames, threatening an executive order to end birthright citizenship. You can hear the trains going off the rails. Yes, that's what that is. The Congressional Budget Office just released a new analysis of the Senate tax bill. And wouldn't you know it, the bill is even worse for lower-income people than previously thought. All cred to Mitch McConnell and his Republican buds in the Senate. 60% of Google workers walked off the job yesterday and issued a manifesto of sorts calling for massive changes in the company in terms of sexual discrimination and transparency. This could be huge. We're talking a global coordinated walkout. Thank you, Google Docs. And speaking of walkouts, this election day, these midterms, next Tuesday, high school and college students at more than 500 schools are planning a walkout to vote. That should be awesome to watch. Of course, that is the main thing that we're going to be focusing on today. Election day coming up. And boy, are there some amazing races to watch. Maybe we'll get into some of those. But let's not get too joyful or excited yet, because Brazil just joined the Autocrat Club. Jair Bolsonaro was elected Brazil's new president on Sunday. Yes, a guy who actually belonged to a fascist party. There can be little question that we are living in a period of history with the very concept of democracy is under assault. Kicking things off, Bolsonaro's party has launched a campaign against indoctrinator teachers, threatening to round them up, not to mention journalists and communists, which means things like The Economist magazine. They count as communist. And let's not forget the war against the caravan and the GOP's closing racist ads. Today's PA focus, you got Scott Wagner. Man, he's pulling in within 26 points of Governor Wolf in the latest Franklin and Marshall poll. Way to go, Senator Soprano. I'll tell you.
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
There is no respect, down 26 points. And the day after the Pittsburgh shooting, Scott Wagner spreads conspiracy theories about who is funding the travel caravan. The Susquehanna Policy Center, a conservative polling firm, has George Scott and Jess King within 3 to 4 points of Scott Perry and Lloyd Smucker, respectively. And they also have Ron DeNicola leading Mike Kelly by 6 points. That's huge. You might want to ask your local union or organization, too, as well, if they actually throw money toward the Susquehanna Policy Center, that Koch-funded think tank. You just might want to inquire into those things. It'd be kind of funny if you had unions and progressive organizations supporting that, right? Joe Biden will be stumping all over Pennsylvania on Sunday, and he'll be campaigning with Matt Cartwright and George Scott. And it looks like methane migration from natural gas operations in Greene County, PA, may have been responsible for the house that blew up and nearly killed 3 people. Transition fuel, bridge fuel, right, Governor Wolf? Will labor activists hold their union leaders accountable if Scott Wallace loses his race for the PA first? Keeping Republicans in power in the House? I wonder. Comfortable union leaders are going to have to get with the program or be complicit with the demise of what's left of our labor movement. The latest polls are concerning. And if you listen to the Rick Smith Show on Friday night, you heard me going right at that. And the new Posse's new chancellor, Daniel Greenstein, visited Kutztown. I'll give you my first impressions. Sean's going to see Papa Joe Biden. That's right. We'll talk about that in today's Last Call. And Free Will's got another can release coming out tomorrow. It's called the Kiwi Kick Punch. I'll tell you a little about that. We'll see what else comes up. We've got kind of a light Last Call today. Want to remind everybody, tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. If you missed the show, go to the ricksmithshow.com and click on the Free Speech TV icon on the sidebar. Go to all the archives right there. And you know what? I don't mention this enough. I mean, Rick's show every night from, 9 to 11. Rick's radio show is going there. Just go to ricksmithshow.com, and you listen to his radio show live every night from Monday through Friday. I want to remind everybody, if we care about a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Not ready to become a member? No problem. Just go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the big blue donate button in the right sidebar. We've got the midterms literally, 4 days away now? 4 days. And you know what? We're not going away after the election. At least one of us is not going away after the election. And we need to dig in, right? We're going to be doing some recruiting of some new writers, recruiting of some new personalities to bring on at Raging Chicken Press, because now, once we're past the elections, we got to remember, we don't go home, kick up our feet, and forget about it. It means holding people accountable the day after the election. Go to patreon.com/rcpress, become a member for those $5 a month, and help support this work for the long haul. Well, Sean, man, here we are, another week. And this week, if the train had already come off the rails, this was like, you know, it careening down the cliff into the abysses of the moral underbelly of American society. That's the way I can think about it.
Yeah. I mean, like, the Republican Party has just gone off the rails. Like, I mean, what happened in Pittsburgh on Saturday was an absolute tragedy. That's something that, you know, like, I know legislators and people who are part of that community in Squirrel Hill. And it's like, the response from the community has been amazing, especially protesting Trump and stuff like that. But I mean, what else do we have to say when the Republicans have done nothing but ran on these dog whistles,
right,
for the past how many years? These racist dog whistles, but, and also these dog whistles going after George Soros. And this is like years of that type of hateful rhetoric boiling over and coming to a head.
Well, exactly.
There's just no other way of getting around it.
There, like, isn't. No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, this isn't just an issue with Trump. It is an issue with Trump, but this is the issue with the Republican Party writ large. Like, it is just like, it's, I mean, Scott Wagner said a lot of hate, called Soros a Jew who hates America last summer. Every single time there's a event throughout this past summer, he points out the trackers who work for American Bridge and said that he's getting paid by George Soros.
Yep.
And puts them out in the crowd, names them by name.
Yep.
And this is actually something we were talking about over the summer. Like, the trackers, like, this guy's trying to get me killed.
Yeah.
Like, and this is what that type of rhetoric leads to.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, there's just no other way of putting it out there.
No, and I think that, you know, and you saw it.
I mean,
Chuck Schumer. Okay, can we just talk about Chuck Schumer for a second?
Yeah,
his both and crap.
He did it again.
Well, we talked about this last week, right?
Yes.
But he did, you know, it's the same thing. We've got to call for, we all got to calm down. It's not we all got to calm down. You know, like, it's.
Thing I put on Facebook this past week. The left, the radical left, wants living wages for everyone. Wants health care for everyone. Free university. Free public higher education. You know, actual respect and dignity for people at the workplace. And being able to live, you know, people having Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, other programs like that. Food stamps. The radical right, this is what they've been saying for years. This is not a surprise that this happened. And no, it's not a both sides issue.
Right, exactly.
Like it's not a both sides issue when one side is working. Yes, you're going to shout at, like, come on, Mitch McConnell not being able to have a dinner in public. That's public shaming. That's different from like sending mail bombs to your political enemies.
Do you think?
Or shooting up a synagogue.
No, and look, and I this is where I say, like, the media and everybody needs to get straight on these issues. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you have to call things out. And, you know, a friend of mine, my friend Doug, was out in Chicago. He posted this to Facebook this week. And there's this guy, his name is Alexander Heeman. And he grew up in Sarajevo. Right. Before Sarajevo broke into the horrible civil war and before there was the Serbian genocide of folks. And, you know, that was, you know, Milosevic kind of basically, you know, committed genocide against people. And so, I mean, like, all this kind of stuff. But anyways, he's posting his reflection about this based upon where we are right now in this country. And he has this, it's on this blog called Lit Hub or Literary Hub, but Lit Hub. And I'll put a link in the show notes today. But he basically goes through and he tells a story about this friend that he grew up with. And his friend, they used to, you know, play soccer together, talk about movies, and they disagree about movies and things like this. And over the years, his friend got more and more radicalized towards the left or towards the right and eventually joined the Serbian army, right, and was all about kind of like, you know, committing that genocide. And this is this guy, Alexander, basically saying that, you know, he's reflecting on that and think about how he carried his guilt all this time. About what he had to realize is that he actually thought that if he continued the conversation, if he was open to them and exchange of ideas with this person, then maybe he'd eventually be able to convince his friend of this. And he comes to this one point where he's like, no, that's not possible. You know, you're at the point where that is not the way to engage these people, right? And he ends this whole piece. I want to read this piece. He ends to say, it's frightening we could think, it's frightening to think we could be entering the civil war mode, wherein none of the differences and disagreements can be hashed out in discussion. It is quite possible that there is no resolution to the present situation until one side is thoroughly destroyed as an ideological power and political entity. If that is the case, the inescapable struggle requires that anti-fascist forces clearly identify the enemy and commit to defeating them, whoever they are, whatever it takes. The time of conversations with fascists is over, even if they might be your best friend from high school. And it's one of these moments where, especially, I mean, if you read the whole piece, he's, you know, puts it in context with his friend, but then brings it to where we are right now. I think that's the kind of clarity that we really need to be embracing. This is not a win-win situation.
Yeah, this is not a both sides issue. Like there's one side that wants to better society, and I mean there is another side that wants to literally annihilate, or speaking that type of rhetoric and dog whistles, that it's stunning. I mean, yeah, no, it's stunning.
Look, it's taken it from, you know, the Republicans have been playing this very dangerous game for a long time.
40 years, 50 years.
Exactly. And I mean, ever since Nixon, what's that?
Since like the Birch Society back in the 50s and 60s,
yep,
pretty much. Like, I mean,
and Nixon brought it into the mainstream. And then every, you know, and then every, you know, time, every once in a while, you get the reemergence of it. What's that?
Ronald Reagan did the same thing back to get reelected and get elected. You know, talking about the welfare queen.
Yep.
Like it's.
Or he just went to, basically he went and stood at the launch his campaign. He went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, and stood on the place where there were activists that were killed and used that as a place to talk about states' rights. He didn't need to say.
Yeah.
That it, you know, I'm embracing you, racist. Join me, because he was standing on that very ground. Right. So, I mean, the Republican Party's been doing this for a while. They took off like all the guardrails right before when Sarah Palin was brought into the McCain campaign and gave it a national platform, a legitimized national platform. That was the beginning of the, you know, the full throttle on the Tea Party. That was the beginning of the full throttle of the reemergence of the kind of white nationalists in our public sphere being interviewed on national news programs. Right.
As a legitimate candidate for,
and, well, as a different side to the story, you know, and like, you know, hey, look, well, there's these people who are anti-fascist. There are these people who believe that we should have like a solely a white nation. Let's see what they both sides, what either side has to say. And who knows? Maybe the truth is somewhere in between. No, that I mean, I don't want to live in that country. I want to live in the country that says, no. Those guys. The freaking like patriarchal, like hate filled white racists. No, we say no to them. Not like, well, I don't know. Maybe he got some good points. No, it's just no, period.
I know.
Deplatform. Go away.
Yeah. Like it's, and I mean, like, and the Republicans are still doing this.
Yeah.
They're still doing it, and they're still doing it after what happened last week. Like it's like the, you know, it, yeah. I mean, it's this eternal Jew conspiracy theory that's been morphed. It's this Elders of Zion conspiracy theory that's been morphed for like 100 years now.
Yep.
Like these are what, like these are what these ads are portraying.
That's right.
Like when Scott Wagner goes on TV on Sunday, the day after the fucking shooting that happened, and says like, we don't know who is paying for these caravanners to come up to,
right,
to come up to the United States. Yep. Like not only are they stoking fear, you know, against brown people, against the Latinos, the people from Honduras and Guatemala and South America making their way up on this dangerous trip. But he is also, again, putting out their anti-Semitic tropes.
Yep.
That George Soros or some powerful, it's a Jewish cabal that's funding.
Well, look, yeah, and very explicitly. This is not just like, this is an assumption. Let me give you the perfect example. This is where Kevin McCarthy stuff in. Now, Kevin McCarthy is definitely not the brightest bulb in the box, like number one. If you ever see this guy operate.
A racist.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, he's not even smart enough to hide, right, on what the agenda is, right? So after Soros was sent the bomb, okay, this is the tweet that he puts up, and he pins it right to the top of his Twitter profile. This is what he says. He says, we cannot allow Soros, Steyer, and Bloomberg to buy capitals this election. Get out and vote Republican November 6th. Hashtag MAGA, American flag. Right? Now, what do Soros, Steyer, and Bloomberg have in common, Sean? Two of them start with S. That's not it. No, they're all Jewish, right? They're all, and this was at the front of the line in terms of what was going on in right wing circles.
So, okay, yeah.
Right before, and that's after the bombs and before the killing, and then after the killings in Pittsburgh, he takes it down.
And you know, like this week, Pennsylvania GOP put a tweet out on the 30th, the day before Halloween, and said, Chairman Val DiGiorgio is happy to be back home in Chester County tonight and welcome Candace Owens as the keynote speaker at the Chester County Republican Committee Fall Dinner.
Explain that, Sean.
This is the party that this is how the Pennsylvania GOP has just gone off the rails completely since losing three seats to the Supreme Court Justice Democrats in 2015. They swept house. They got rid of Gleason, who used to run the Republican Party. And they brought in Val DiGiorgio, and from day one, might as well just be wearing jack boots and a brown shirt. Like, that's how his rhetoric is. And they brought in Candace Owens to speak at.
Tell everybody who she is.
She last week tweeted out that Democrats were sending these mail bombs to themselves as an election stunt. This is 2 weeks ago. Saying they're doing it as a stunt for the election.
Yep.
And this is who they bring in.
Right. She's the director. She's the director of communications of Turning Point USA. Right. Which we've talked about.
Like, right organization.
Right.
And you know, another thing, it's one of the things I've been seeing around in some of these counties. Like, there's a big banner in the background too, on top of the wall. It said, if you love Chester County, if you love life in Chester County, vote Republican. That's pretty explicitly implicit to what they're trying to imply here.
Yes, of course. And look, again, if you take anyone
putting up in Cumberland County, if you love life in Cumberland County, you know, in these white affluent counties in the Philadelphia and Harrisburg suburbs,
right,
these are the stuff that they are putting up.
Right.
Which is a coded billboard.
Right.
Keep Cumberland County white. Keep Chester County white.
And it's crazy that we've got to even talk about this. Like, because if you take any single one of these messages in isolation, right, this is what you see what happens on in the media all the time, is that somebody will bring up an example of like a racist statement or sign or tweet or ad, whatever it might be. And then you get the conservative, the right-wing folks, or the kind of just like, you know, the kind of the do-gooder journalist kind of say, well, that doesn't necessarily mean X, Y, or Z, right? So in order to – you have to look at the entire context, right, where all these things fit together in a strategy and a pattern, right? And what really sucks to me – and I really don't know how to deal with this. I really don't know how to deal with the fact that we can recognize these patterns like when they happened 20 years ago. Like, we can go back and look at what was going on with the Southern strategy with Nixon. Yeah, and kind of like and map it all out. Because you know why? Because it's safe. It's safe and it doesn't require anything, doesn't require you to do anything now. It doesn't take you to kind of get in the messy world as it is. All right, this is the one thing that I get so frustrated, right, when you sit there. Like, you know, I've had these conversations with, you know, professionals, in many cases academics, where you're talking about things historically. You can pour all this kind of this racist crap. You can see the patterns. You see what goes on. And then you bring up something that's happening currently right now. And then suddenly they're like, oh, I don't know about that. I think that's a little extreme. I mean, you're like, it's the same thing, right? It's not identical. The fascists today don't live in Germany. Okay, I'll grant you that. No, they live down the street. Right? So, I mean, I don't know. We just got to get some clarity on the fact that we are.
This is something that's been brewing since before Trump became elected. When he got elected, this, like, the floodgates had just opened.
Yep.
I mean, the people are getting radicalized by Trump. Like, I mean, the right-wing populism, and this is where we need an actual populist message from the left to counter this. We can't sit back and say, like, have half-meaning measures to counter this.
No, right. I mean, it's got to be direct.
It's turning into your side versus our side, and we're going to fight it out in the electoral system and see whose ideas win. At this point, like, it's time for the Democratic Party to just swing to the left and put it. Voters got to make a choice. Which side do you want to live in?
Yeah. And you know what? And the politicians have to make a choice too. are you going to continue to side with these with the racists and the neo-fascists, or are you going to freaking at least join in some semblance of the, like, a kind of broad-based pluralistic democracy? I mean, your call. You know what I mean?
I mean, we didn't even talk about, like, the executive order this week.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I mean, that and Trump sending 5,000 troops to the fucking, to the border. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for cursing this morning, but it's like, you think after people getting mail bombs and a Jewish synagogue gets shot up, you think a proper response would be tone down the rhetoric a little bit?
Nope.
It's double down.
Yeah, exactly.
Down and coming out with more hateful rhetoric and, you know, continuing the same hate speech that is driving these people.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, I mean, this is, you know, once again, it was exactly, you see, well, you see, like, one, you see Trump sending 5,200 troops to the border, right? And look, I mean, by all accounts, that the caravan of people that are walking to the north, right, would not even get to the U.S. border for at least like a month and a half, 2 months, right? If they're all come, number one. Number two, there are people seeking refugee status, right? And they're not people that are like coming here with some magic, like, tunnel drilling mechanism that they're trying to sneak up and take over your mountain house. Right. I mean,
like, they're not walking down the street with like a ramrod from like a medieval ramrod, like to like just knock down the gates.
These are like, freaking. I mean, that's what kills me. It's like they're refugees. They're not
see them.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole purpose of all doing that together. So there's safety in numbers, and there's no, they're not hiding. They're saying we are refugees. We are seeking asylum, and not just in the U.S., right? I mean, the U.S. military, I don't know if you saw this, but yesterday the U.S. military leaked a document to a reporter from Newsweek. Basically, because, look, once the president says we're sending you to, we need 5,200 troops to go to the border, the military has to come up with a threat assessment. So they come up with a threat assessment about what the threat is. And the threat is like, not really a threat here. And I say, based upon past caravans like this and things that have happened, most of these people won't even get to the U.S. border. They'll end up staying in Mexico or other places along the way. Right. And there's no threat, basically. And so the military released this. I mean, they leaked it to basically show that they think this is basically just a political stunt. That we're spending how many millions of dollars to send these people down. And the total force of what the troops they're putting in reserve are more troops than we have in Afghanistan. So you have people that are fleeing like certain death in their homelands, looking for refugee status, which they are allowed to do under UN guidelines, of which the US is a signator, right? And then they're being treated as an invading army. And that is the language that they're using on the right. And it's all over Fox News. And this is crazy. And then, so you have that. And then you have an executive order to try to end birthright citizenship. Right? Which, I mean, look, it's a freaking constitutional. It's a constitutional amendment. Like, you can't change that without changing the Constitution. And all,
I mean, I don't see the Supreme Court throwing a curveball on this one. Even though, like, how conservative it is, but like, you just never know.
Well, and like some of my, I don't know if you've had this experience, and like, maybe this is just me, maybe because like, I'm really kind of at my limit, right? I've had it in so many different levels, but you know, I've had these conversations with some people that, you know, bring this stuff up about the birthright citizenship, right? And you bring it up, so look at that, this is crazy. And then they'll say, yeah, but this is just a political stunt, right? And it is a political stunt. I agree with that. Right. But that doesn't mean that he's not going to follow through with it. Like, I mean, what evidence do we have since the Trump administration? No, since the Trump campaign, for that matter, what evidence do we have that he's going to follow some norms or it's not going to push things to a limit? What evidence is there? There's none. right? If you're looking at what's the next logical step for the Trump administration to go through, right, is basically once they kind of like have they floated this idea about birthright citizenship, now he's going to do the order, or at least get really close to doing the order, and it's going to dominate the news cycle for so long that we'll continue the fervor, anti-immigrant, racist fervor that is out there. And when that dies down, he'll wait for the big confrontation when the people finally arrive, the caravan finally arrives. And he basically set out and say, look, you know, okay, look, you know, they're there just as a supportive thing because U.S. troops on U.S. soil, they can't kind of like take on police actions. Unless, of course, any of those people in those caravans, if they throw a rock, well, if they throw a rock at you, then you can shoot them. Right? I mean, these are, I don't know how we don't see these as extraordinarily dangerous times. Like, it feels like I live in this parallel universe. I see this stuff going on, and it seems like this is crisis mode. But so much of what goes on out there in the world, like when I'm driving to work and I'm at work and stuff like that, is like just normal. Just going about our days.
It's not affecting us.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Like, it's that, you know, that I don't know the priest. But it's that poem, like, and then they came for me, and no one was left to
right.
stand.
Exactly.
Like that. That's. Oh yeah, they're only the immigrants. They're only the Muslims.
No,
transgender community.
Oh, exactly.
Like it's.
No, seriously. And I was, you know, I went trick or treating with my kids, right? You know, kind of on Wednesday. I had to rush home because I teach later on Wednesdays. And so I had to rush home, get the costumes on. We're going on trick or treating. We had some friends that came over. And I'm just kind of like walking around being like, this is just kind of surreal, right? I mean, I don't know how to be in this space of, you know, just put the other stuff aside. And, you know, it's my own problem, but whatever. Just put the stuff aside and focus on the fun for now. I'm like, fun? Did I tell you who I wanted to dress up as this year?
Who?
Steve Bannon. I had it halfway there, and then I just couldn't. I was like in too bad of a mode. Because I'm like, that's...
You need like a half-spent bottle of whiskey.
No, totally. Like I had the whole thing. You have the double polo collars, right? And then you've got he's got this one particular one. He gave a talk. I can't remember what forum it was at.
Wear a Fred Perry shirt.
Oh, well, you could do that. But I like the double polo collar. You've got the lanyard that comes around, and you've got the green olive green army jacket on top as your overlay with like scruffy face and kind of long disheveled hair and a microphone. And so that's what I was gonna do, but I didn't have time. And then I was like, you know, I don't even know if I could stomach it myself, because then I'm gonna have to have all these conversations with people. Like, well, who are you? I'm a Steve Bannon. Who's that? Oh, he's the altar. All right, racist who fanned the flames that get Trump elected, right? And that would have been my Halloween night, right?
I guess more bad news.
Yeah.
Brazil.
Oh my God. My God.
Like I have not been following the Brazil situation a lot, but I've listened to it when Michael Brooks from
Majority Report, yeah.
Majority Report and the Michael Brooks Show. Two excellent podcasts. He is really good at reporting on international affairs.
Yep.
This type of stuff, like digging down into more international affairs stuff. And he's been talking about Bolsonaro for months now, saying, hey, this guy's dangerous. Like, and, you know, this might be the type of thing where, like, where Glenn Greenwald lives in
Brazil. Yep.
You know, like, do you think that, like, he's not safe anymore?
No way. No way.
I mean, this is someone who was part of a paramilitary force in the 70s and 80s and was famous for saying, we didn't kill enough people.
Right.
We didn't kill enough communists. We didn't kill enough dissenters, protesters, and stuff like that. We should have killed more.
Yep.
And this is who just got elected.
That's pretty much it.
I mean,
right. I look at this time like, and I, you know, again, I'm not the guy to make the big broad historical comparisons, but I look at this time where you see like Bolsonaro in Brazil, you see like the rise of this kind of like radical right in Europe
and Le Pen and stuff like that.
Exactly. And like, I can't help but think that there must have been, like in the early part of the 20th century, right, this kind of dynamic that was going on in Europe, right? The fact that you had kind of fascism rise from Japan, right, and Germany and Italy, like all around the same time, right? That sense that this is what was in the air, so to speak. That's what it feels like to me now. And, you know, I can't, I am always thinking about the fact that, like, I mean, anybody who's ever, like, you know, you first learn about the, you know, World War II, and you learn about the Holocaust. And, you know, I remember having these conversations, like, in junior high and stuff with my friends, like, you know, man, like, why didn't the Germans say something, right? Why didn't they do something? How did they let this happen? Right. And I would have done this, and I would have done X, and I would have done, I wouldn't have let, and here we are, right, in a situation that is not all that different in terms of the, you know, the raw hatred that is informing and giving energy to the rise of these autocratic regimes. And it makes me nervous to say we have that question and we need to be asking that self question right now. And this, I want to give a plug to a podcast along this scale. Just I wanted to mention it in the intro and I didn't. I strongly recommend people check out Gaslit Nation. Gaslit Nation is it's a podcast with Sarah Kendzior and Andrea Chalupa. They both study, Sarah Kendzior in particular studies autocratic regimes. Andrea Chalupa is a filmmaker, studies this stuff, and they've talked a lot about this stuff on their podcast. And Sarah Kendzior was one of the few people that was warning about the rise of Trump and what this would look like well before the election. And she was kind of dismissed and shoo-shooed and say, you're being a conspiracy theorist, you're being extreme. And sure enough, all the things that she talked about are just is exactly what's gone on.
I know it, like, when I was working with Rick at the Rick Smith Show back in 2015.
Yeah.
And day one, when Trump went down the escalator, Rick's like, there's the next president of the United States right there.
Yep.
And I laughed at him.
Yep.
It's like, no, you're joking. It's like, no, this he's going to win.
Yep.
Like, he said it from day one.
Yep. Like, yeah, Rick called it. Rick called it, exactly. I remember talking with Rick. I'm telling you, it wasn't until, and we've talked about this before, it wasn't until, like, literally, like, a day and a half before the 2016 election that I was finally, like, I finally said, okay, no, maybe I'm just being a little too extreme by thinking that Trump's going to win this. Yeah, the polls say it. Clinton's definitely going to win. But I should have stuck my guns with what Rick said at that point, because, man, yeah.
I mean, like, and that summer, we were on the we did a People's Tour through the South, and like one of the first nights of the tour on our tour was the Republican debate, where Trump said those horrific comments about Megyn Kelly.
There you go.
And like, Trump, Rick's like, he's going to win. Like, this is what his base, this is what the base wants. Like, yep. he is the epitome of what they want.
Yep.
And, you know, no one stood up to him in either the general election or the primary. So.
Cool, man. Yeah, that's grand. Well, there is some good news. There is some good news. So let's put a pin in the autocratic rise of the next wave of fascism. So good news is this, right? One, if you look at what just happened, I think this is huge. We're going to keep an eye on this going long term. About 60% of I kind of misstated this, right? It's 60% of all Google offices, right? I said 60% of all Google workers, but in 60% of all Google offices globally, Google employees, thousands of Google employees were walking out. And they were calling for, one, an end to forced arbitration in cases of harassment and discrimination, commitment to end pay and opportunity inequity, to publicly disclose sexual harassment and transparently report them, so they're available, clear, uniform, globally inclusive process of reporting sexual misconduct, to promote chief of diversity officer to answer directly to the CEO, and appoint an employee representative to the board. Now, what's amazing about this is, one, number one, you're talking about kind of a global move with Google employees, and this is the first time that we see a major push to really think about collective action and collective organizing at the, like, arguably most influential company on the face of the planet right now, right? So that's really cool. So we're going to continue to follow that, but that's just go check some of that stuff out. I have a couple links in here, but it's a fascinating development. The other thing is, like I said, too, as well, we're going to have high school students, high school students and college students at more than 500 high schools and colleges and universities will be walking out on election day to the polls, right? And then having rallies at the polls and those who can vote to go in and vote. That is, I love to see that, right? That voting is not just this kind of private thing, but it's a collective action, right? Here's to the youth. And I don't know if you saw this, I got in a little back and forth, with a guy that used to work at Kutztown, about this. He made a snarky little comment about, when I posted the fact that, millennials basically are kind of like, you know, like all behind democratic socialism, right? And so, and I said, like, listen to the youth. And he didn't like that comment so much, but so I'm like, nope, listen to the youth. They got it right. So
one of my neighbors says, who's a high school teacher, retired high school teacher, he said the kids are coming. Like, yep. And he's like, you don't understand how vastly different a lot of these kids are in high school than they are their parents' generation.
It's true.
Like, yeah. So
no, I see it. You know, I see it. You know, I've been involved in activist politics since I was in high school, right? And you know, I can say that my generation, right, the Gen Xers or whatever you want to call it, we tried, right? There were a few of us that tried, but we got rolled hard, right? I remember these periods of lamenting about how. Like, man, I wish there was more activism, And then you have these little upticks and then down. And then you had, like, finally, we saw this global justice movement coming together. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And then 9/11 happens and basically takes the momentum out of the sails. Like, all that kind of stuff was going on. And, you know, it gets exhausting, right? And then, but I say right now, is like, I'm telling you, is that as millennials get so much of a bad rap, because I don't see all the kind of like entitled whiners, right? That's not generally the kids that I see, the young folks that I see, right? That I come through Kutztown. I see something very different. I see people that are kind of organizing for hope and out of necessity. Right. As I said in one of my Facebook responses to the guy who was giving me a hard time about this, I said, yeah, I think we should listen to the youth because, you know, they're the ones who are going to be holding unprecedented amount of debt. They're the ones who are going to be impacted by catastrophic climate change. They're the ones who are going to have the impacts of all the policies that we failed to address. So, yeah, I think we need to listen to them. And you know what? They're taking up the banner and they're doing it in such a way that it's a collective process and it's filled with the kind of joy of resistance that we need. So, man. So, Sean, before we break on this one, I got a question for you. Any particular race that you're looking for on Tuesday that you're going to be following, you're looking particularly excited about?
I think the Jess King race. Like, I don't know. I don't know. The Jess King race. Even if she doesn't pull it off, Lancaster is forever going to change politically after this. The work that Becca Rass, Nick Martin, who are from the Lancaster Stands Up, they started it in response to Trump after 2016. Mm-hmm. They're running the campaign. The work that John Smucker, who is Becca's husband. And Rafi Diaz and, you know, everyone else involved with Lancaster Stands Up. It's been fun watching the ads that Smucker's groups are putting out. This is not so funny background story. Lloyd Smucker is second cousins with John Smucker, and John Smucker is running Lancaster Stands Up and is running one of a Mennonite type resistance movement in Lancaster County, like, that is absolutely killing it. And they're putting together some of the best political ads his group Beyond the Choir and other stuff. And it's, even if Jess doesn't win, they have changed the political dynamic of Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Well, and I think that, you know what, and it's a model for political work. You have got a candidate who's connected to a movement, right? And the energy and the power and the organizing comes out of that movement. I think that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So
there it is.
We'll talk about that in the next segment, but that is definitely one of the races I'm watching. I hope George Scott pulls it out against Scott Perry, which would be another upset. And you know, Andrew Gillum, Stacey Abrams, some history is going to be made on Tuesday night.
I think with
Gillum and, you know, potentially with Abrams, and let's see if Beto O'Rourke pulls it out too.
Yeah, that's you know, I'm telling you, is like, that's one of the races that I'm watching really closely. That the Gillum and the Abrams races. So, like,
one of the things, like, I've been watching, been following some of the different political polls on Twitter, and 538 is giving the Democrats a 15% chance of winning the Senate. I think that there's a path that they could pull it out and win. Some of the polls have been tightening. It looks like Democrats may pick up both Senate seats in Arizona. You know, if
that blows my mind, by the way.
Like, seeing that happen, and I think that there is a legitimate shot that the Democrats can pull out the upset and get the Senate. Just by looking at some of the polls that have been surging in the past, like, few days. Everything's trending. It's trending in a different direction, but it's still a long shot.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of unknowns in all the polls too, because they're saying that basically breaking all records for early voting for a midterm election, they're being buried.
I was on a phone call yesterday with America Votes, listening in. I actually have my notes like right here. I'm looking for them, but like early voting, I can't find it. I wish I had, but like early voting in Georgia or no Florida is up. Like 100% with Black and Latino residents.
Yep.
Early voting is through the roof with non-politically affiliated voters in Florida, almost doubled what it was in 2014. Like, the non-party affiliated voters in Florida are your independents who are pretty much skewing to the left of things. So, yeah. I mean, there's going to be pickups to be made in Arizona. You can get two there. You can get a couple pickups in. You can get a pickup in Florida with the Senate. I think there's a legitimate shot that Democrats can win the Senate and pull out the upset.
We'll see, because I mean, given the turnout and the people that have historically, like, groups of folks and demographics who have historically not turned out for midterm elections, they seem to be turning out.
My friends think that this is going to be. They're sensing on the ground here in different parts of Pennsylvania that this is going to be presidential type turnout.
Yeah,
like presidential type turnout than like a regular midterm type turnout.
I hope so, man. I hope so. Well, here. So there we go. We're going to know in 4 short days, folks. Get out to vote. Get other people out to vote. Drive people to the polls if you need to. Knock on doors to make sure your neighbors have voted. The neighbors that are going to vote in the right way, that is. but this is an important moment, like, in the history of this country. So pretty cool. So just want to remind everybody, before we take a break, support Raging Chicken Press. Become a member by going to patreon.com/RC Press. You become a member for as little as $5 a month. You can support progressive media, not just for the elections, but for what happens after the elections, where we keep on going and to hold power accountable. We'll be right back right after this short break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1955. That was the day that the song 16 Tons first made an appearance on the Billboard Country Music Chart. It would reach the top spot and stay there for 10 weeks. 16 Tons told the story of the hard lives faced by coal miners. The song talks about falling into debt at the company's store, a reality faced by many coal mining families. The song had first been recorded by Merle Travis in the mid-1940s. The song borrowed lyrics from things that Merle had heard from his father, who was a coal miner. Merle Travis sung the songs of working people. He was labeled a Red and communist, and during that era, stations would not play his music. 16 Tons was recorded again by Tennessee Ernest Jennings Ford in 1955. Tennessee Ernie's grandfather and uncle had both been in the mines. Tennessee began to perform 16 Tons to enthusiastic crowds. He then recorded it as a B-side to his single, You Don't Have to Be a Baby to Cry, for Capitol Records. But the B-side recording became a hit. The song was so popular, it jumped off the country charts and took the pop music number one spot for 8 weeks and became a gold record. Since then, 16 Tons has been covered by a variety of artists, from Johnny Cash to Tom Jones and Tom Morello to ZZ Top, and has become a true labor standard.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast, and it looks like another joyous week here in Pennsylvania as we have a magic number of 26. Ain't that right, Sean?
So I am setting the over-under at 38.
38.
That is the percent, the amount of the share, the percentage, total percentage of votes that Scott Wagner will get on Tuesday's election.
So you're saying he's getting 38.
It too. Like...
38. Wait, I got to write that down. I got to write that down.
38%.
You say Wagner, you're putting Wagner at 38.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, right now, because Franklin Marshall Paul had him down 26 points, but you're saying when all is said and done, 38% Wagner. All right. This is Sean's prediction. And
I'm handicapping it because the Franklin and Marshall poll showed that Wolf is up like 59-33 at this point. And talking to a couple Republicans in the legislature, in staffers and people in Harrisburg, they said they'll be floored if Wagner picks up, if Wagner gets 35.
Wow.
Like, these are coming from people who work in Harrisburg, who are Republicans. They're like, yeah, we'll be shocked if he gets 35%.
So they're looking at your 38 and saying, nah, you're being optimistic.
Yes.
A bit. Oh, man. Well, that's pretty crazy, man. So
I mean, there's going to be a lot of Republicans that are either not going to vote for Wagner or are going to vote for Wolf and then just split the ticket with everyone else. There's also going to be a lot of Republicans who are just going to vote straight Dem as a check on their party. I mean, campaign's on life support at this point.
Yeah. There you
go. I wonder if they're looking for jobs at this point.
Who, Wagner?
Not Wagner, but the people who worked in Wagner's campaign. I mean, like, is this like, this is almost like a career killing job. Like,
well,
you have to try hard to get that low of a vote in an election.
Well, but you know, look, I think, and I've said this before on the podcast, I think that some of his staffers have just kind of checked out. Right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're cashing their paychecks. And part of what their pitch is going to be is like, look, there's nothing we can do about this guy. So, yeah, I took a paycheck through the election because I needed a paycheck. But, yeah, I mean, there's nothing you could do. He ran it all. Right. And just lay it all in his lap.
So the funny thing is, like, we're sitting on Roxbury's, we're sitting on the deck with Roxbury the other day, and like Andrew Romeo, who is the campaign communications guy, he has to cross the street in front of the like the office, like the way it's offset, to get to the parking garage where they're at. So it's like he will literally like walk up to the island. They will see us sitting on the deck and walk in the island and then go into the office doors. They won't even look at us. They won't even acknowledge our existence. I mean, it's I really don't want to say anything to them either, because at this point I'm just going to laugh in their face.
Well, you know, it's I hope that you're absolutely right. Actually, I hope those Republicans that you talk to are right. I hope it's 35. But at the very least, I hope he does not break 40%, because I think that can be an important threshold, that, you know, basically say, no, there's no question about the fact that the voters have rejected that whole mode.
And the thing is, so Democrats are basing their turnout models on 2014 plus 1%. So 2014 turnout plus 1%. 2014 was one of the worst years ever, post-war era for turnout. They were saying, which, okay, it's a very conservative approach to this for turnout that they're expecting, which I guess you have to do that. But they say if it's like 2014 plus 4% or 2014 plus 5% of the turnout, to like on top of that,
right,
they're just going to be smashing offices left and right. I mean, just like the there's an outside chance that if like turnout is so high, Republicans are going to lose control of the House. And there's potentially three Republicans willing to switch parties and caucus with the Democrats if it's like 100 or 99, if Democrats got the 199 House seats.
Wow. Man, we'll see. I wish Tuesday were here, because
it's going to be fun being in the Capitol, watching this stuff go down. Like when I moved out here, it's like, I'll just give myself 4 years and see how this craziness is. Like,
no, you picked the right time to go to Harrisburg. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
You got the most momentous presidential election, like, in historical memory. Now you've got midterms that are going, and then it's just been nonstop.
I know. Pennsylvania has been one of the most important states.
Yep.
In this election. And the Republicans decided to just blow their heads off with Barletta and Perry, or Barletta and Wagner running the ticket.
Well, there you have it, man.
They picked the two absolute worst candidates to hitch their wagons to in a wave year election. And they just might get just destroyed.
Oh boy, Tuesday can't come quickly enough, because I'm tired. But and it looks like that we've got a bunch of races around the state that are really close. That, you know,
yeah.
And any other kind of traditional model, you know, before this year, they wouldn't even been, you know, people wouldn't even been looking at them. But
so yeah, so the Susquehanna Policy Center is a conservative polling outlet, a conservative think tank, in based out of Millersville, and they've always been a Republican-leaning firm. It's just who they are. They released three polls that were pretty surprising for people. Two have Jess King and George Scott within 3 to 4 points of Smucker and Scott Perry. And another one has Ron DiNicola out in Western PA, Northwestern PA, within 6 points of Mike Kelly, or ahead of Mike Kelly by 6 points. So we were talking about this. The thing is, this polling firm is an unreliable firm, simply because of their methodology. They have a C rating on 538. They're right 70% of the time, but their questions are, they prime their questions before they ask who they're going to be voting for. Mm-hmm. So there's an issue with those polls, but you got to take them with a grain of salt, but this could be very interesting.
Well, but if anything, like, I mean, you generally would expect something coming out of a polling like this to actually overestimate kind of, say, Republican support, right?
I mean, these are polls with like 60% of the respondents are Republican.
Right.
And to be with this close is pretty, pretty astounding. So we will see. George Scott has been picking up very important endorsements out here. He just got the endorsement of Senator Pat Vance. Senator Vance is a Republican and she is a respected Republican in the area. I mean, the thing is, like, yes, like, there are Republicans in who used to be moderates. Like, they're conservative, but they'll sit down and talk to you, and at least you can talk out your differences, and they might vote with you 15% of the time on your issues. Mm-hmm. Vance was one of these Republicans. She came out and pretty much said, I am voting for George Scott, and this is why. And she was a registered nurse, and she said, we need to be protecting healthcare, pre-existing conditions, and stuff like this, and I want people to join me in doing this. Another Republican that used to be a state representative endorsed Scott, George Scott, a well-respected party person. And it's you're seeing these Republicans breaking away from Scott Perry.
Yeah, and I mean, you're looking at – I mean, even like if you look at Real Clear Politics right now, they have got Perry at plus 2.5. And there's like, you know, again, plus 2.5, that's within the margin of error of the polls. And nobody expected this to be even
that on the team.
Yeah.
Like, and the thing is where this is going to come down to turnout. This district has all of York City, has all of Harrisburg, Dauphin County, most of Dauphin County. Dauphin County always votes for a Democrat. But the main thing where this is going to be decided, this race, it's going to be Camp Hill, Le Moyne, the West Shore suburbs of Harrisburg. Where people like Pat Vance were ran out of the party by Scott Wagner, Mike Regan, Senator Mike Regan, and those type of Republicans. Like, that's who, like, the Wagner base has driven out Republicans who might vote with you 10, 15, 20% of the time, but at least they'll sit down and talk to you. Where, like, these people have no interest in talking at all.
Nope. And right now, so, and you see this as part of like this kind of national trend. It's like number one is that all these folks were, you know, willing to ride the wave of you know, not so subtle racism about the anti Obamacare way, you know, voting into Obamacare and all this stuff. And now they're having to kind of like, I don't know, shoehorn some sort of answer into the electorate, you know, into the questions, because they're finding out that those actually things are the very things that are liabilities. And that comes right down to the fact that you've got candidates like Jess King, for example, that are actually articulating, right, a positive message of things like, you know, healthcare for all, of things like free college tuition, of a progressive message that's rooted in the community. So you know, that I'm telling you, that alone, at least that's hopeful right there.
Yeah. So those are going to be some interesting races. I think the Senate, I still think Pat Brown is going to lose to Pinsley. And you know, we're hearing that the Democrats in the southeastern part of the state, Katie Muth, is doing well.
Yep.
You know, we're going to have some fresh faces in Harrisburg in January, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, man. You could be part of the maybe you'd be part of the welcoming party once again for Sarah Enamorato and Summer Lee. Welcome to the center of the state, and then introduce them around, Sean. You could do that. That could be part of your mission.
I hope like Greg, we were floating this idea around. So if Kristen Seale, Sarah Enamorato, Summer Lee, and Fiedler all win, it's Kristen Seale. She is running. She's like the only one that has to actually win now, because all the other ones are unopposed because they're in heavily Democratic districts. Kristen Seale might be a pickup, and we were all thinking about having a socialist happy hour at some point.
Totally. Do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, to say the least.
Yeah. No kidding. But, so big news that we've got Joe Biden is going to come to the state. So, OK, I'm just going to ask like just the asshole question here. Right. So is he going to mess it up? Right, I mean, is no. But really, I mean, do you think that he's going to add something of value to these campaigns?
So Cartwright's safe.
Uh-huh.
He's probably just coming out for Cartwright to rile people up. And he's from Scranton. So to get people up in Scranton ready, because they all love Joe up there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Joe Biden is a I think he is a lot better of a choice to have in central Pennsylvania than, say, Bernie Sanders the day before an election.
Yeah.
And I think having Joe Biden out and speaking in the area is a big deal for George Scott. I don't think he's going to screw it up.
Okay.
I mean, you look at the breakdown of the – like your West Shore suburbs are your limousine liberal type people.
Okay.
They're your the limousine liberal types. They're the establishment Republican types who don't want to vote for Scott Perry. So it's how much of them are going to come out and vote for George Scott.
Yeah.
And that's why that endorsement by Pat Vance is so important. Because she was that moderating voice mm-hmm. in that area for decades.
Yeah. And you know, the only reason I ask even that question is this, right? Is not because, you know,
I mean, he's obviously running for president.
Well, no, but I mean it like this. I mean it like, let's say, look, because so much of what's happened in that race, right, has been about the district. Right. It hasn't been framed, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, has not been framed as part of a national campaign. Right. It's been very much fought in the district on the terms of the district and geared towards that district. And when Biden comes in, like now it's got that national feel to it. Right. And then, you know, that brings in the kind of Obama Biden history there. That's the only thing that.
I don't see it being an Obama type thing. I think mm-hmm. people love Joe Biden out here regardless.
Okay.
Like, I mean, you can't sink him. People might not like Obama, but people love Joe Biden. I mean, it's predominantly white. It's Joe Biden. And I mean, is going to be Biden.
Like, no, I have no problem. That's what I'm saying. I have no problem right. with like what he's going to say because he's going to be who he's going to be. It just had more to do with the way that the campaign has been run. George Scott, I mean, seems to be doing an amazing job about connecting to the electorate, right, to the immediate yeah. constituency of that district.
I know George Scott's running a good campaign. He's really, I mean, and, you know, it's not surprising that Biden's coming. When I was at the fundraiser a few weeks ago with Rendell and Casey, Rendell is pretty much like, yeah, we're going to do whatever it takes to win this district. If he wins, if George Scott wins, it's a bloodbath. It's going to be a slaughter for Republicans across the country. Like, this is a bellwether race. Like, it's – I just can't wait to get up Tuesday morning and just hit that fucking button,
yeah,
straight to them, and vote Scott Perry out of office. Like – That's going to be like the most gratifying thing,
dude. Just
saying, yeah, I voted Scott Perry out of office today.
Yeah, what's bumming me out is I've got to wait until what it'll be like 3:30 before I can vote on Tuesday, because I have to leave. I have to leave for Kutztown to go to teach by about 6:30, and the polls aren't open yet. So it's like, and so I got to come in, but my kids are going to wait for me. They said, we'll see, that they have the day off. And so and my wife's home with them. So we'll see if they actually wait for me, but I love going there with them. Right. So maybe they'll go with me anyways, even if they vote already. But, I'll be at the end of the day. I can't wait to see the polling places, to be honest with you. It's just going to be, something.
I mean, like turnouts typically has to be high in my neighborhood because it's all state workers.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, government, like state legislatures, site people, staffers. So it's like, you know, you don't vote. It's just as bad as like shooting someone, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe worse.
Yeah. So they're all like inside the beltway people like you, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
There you go. Well, the one that I've been watching a lot, and you know, if like
still
I mentioned,
chapping your ass.
What's that?
So it's still chapping your ass.
Oh, totally, 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 totally. So, did we talk about this on the podcast last week?
Yes, we did.
We did. Okay.
Yeah, we did for about 20 minutes.
All right. So I'm not going to redo the whole thing all over again. Basically what I'm going to do is going to point you to, if you want to look at, the Rick Smith show, I was on that, Friday night, basically calling folks to the carpet, right. You know, basically from, Ask Me Council 13, the, PAAFL-CIO and PSEA about the PA First. The PA First, of course, is where you've got Brian Fitzpatrick running against Scott Wallace. And Brian Fitzpatrick, the way basically
voted with Trump 85% of the times.
Right, exactly. Voted with Trump 85% of the time. Voted for the tax bill, which is going to have negative, like huge negative impacts on kind of working families, poor, lower middle class folks. If you look at the breakdown, we didn't talk about this because we've got too much stuff to talk about. But we didn't talk about this in the first part. But if you look at the new CBO analysis of the Senate tax plan, is that you have a significant number of people are going to be paying a lot of money, and the people who are going to benefit most, like initial or at least through the thing, are people from like about 100,000 people who make $100,000 a year to up to $500,000 a year. But people below that are actually going to be paying more in taxes long term. So that's the kind of thing which is what Brian Fitzpatrick voted for. Now, look, if you were to look at all the Republicans, if you were to abstract this race from everything else that's going on in the world, right, and you look at Brian Fitzpatrick is the kind of Republican for like days gone by. Right, the kind of like reasonable, moderate guy who's actually been, he's not been horrible, right? but the point is that even if we're going to give him the fact that he's the right kind of Republican, right? This is the wrong time, because everything depends upon regaining the House. Everything depends upon Democrats being able to have power in order for us to put pressure and put, number one, a check on the kind of things that's happening in Trump stuff right now, but then also to organize around to push these folks further towards progressive aims. So when I saw, PSCA and AFL-CIO and AFSCME Council 13 support throw their endorsement behind Brian Fitzpatrick, it just blew my mind, because it fundamentally misunderstands power politics in this age. So what I would encourage you to do is like watch that race pretty carefully, because right now it's like as tight as it can be. If you got Fitzpatrick at the Real Clear Politics average right now is coming in at 2.5, but the it ranges everywhere from polls from that show Fitzpatrick up by one. If you look at polls from last week, you had a New York Times Siena poll with Wallace up by seven. That seems to be an outlier, however. But it could tip either way. So I think that if people in Bucks County get out and vote, I think Wallace can actually take that seat, right? But here we go. The question is, what happens after that? Is what do we say to our leaders in the union movement about kind of these kind of endorsements and so on? So pay attention to that. And if things happen to go south, right, which, again, we don't expect them to be going south, but if it comes down to just like a few districts, right, that are going to make the difference between the Democrats taking the House or not, and then the PA1 goes the wrong way, then how are we going to hold our leaders accountable, those of us at least in the labor movement? So just keep that in mind. Last thing I'll take a little word. Oh, you got anything else to kind of throw on the table, Sean?
No.
Sean's waving to me. He likes to wave at me. So we had a PASSHE's new chancellor, Daniel Greenstein, visited Kutztown this past week. And I'll just give you my quick first like impressions. This guy, he used to run basically education stuff for the Gates Foundation, right? Like the capital T-H-E Gates Foundation. The Gates Foundation, when their education stuff, they were heavily invested in things like, what's that, Sean?
He's a Zen Buddhist, right?
Sort of. They're heavily invested in, charter schools and remaking higher education. And basically he affirmed that when he came to Kutztown. And basically, that's basically going to be the mission, about remaking the Pennsylvania state system of higher education. What that's going to look like, don't know. I have to say this. I think that it is going to be I have the feeling that things are going to happen fairly quickly, and I think he's going to get a lot of traction for reasons that have nothing to do with Pennsylvania per se necessarily, but have to do with the fact that, I was joking with someone who could call him like Chancellor McDreamy, right? I mean, he's got the good hair. He's got the kind of like very personable. He's nice. He talked about social justice. right? He's likable, and he comes out of the kind of like, you know, that the liberal elite, right, of the high tech sector, right? Just moved here from Seattle, but was born here, grew up in Pennsylvania. He's got everything going for it, and I think that people on the Board of Governors are totally like wooed by the guy. And I think that's going to grease the machine a little bit in terms of changing what happens in the state system of higher education. I think that I'm going to save that for another time. But he, you know, came in and I said that, you know, there's three things I'll say about my first impressions. It's like, number one, right, the positive about where he comes in, he recognized, I think, correctly, some of the significant problems in terms of, say, the distrust and the way things have been done in the past, and didn't minimize those things, which that's a positive. However, the way he framed the solutions was basically, one, we can't do anything about the demographics, the economics or the economy or politics, but we can change how our culture. And then he told a story a little bit later on about saying, this woman saying to her son or something like that, you can't change your environment, but you can change how you relate to it. Right. So when I hear that, and I've heard versions of this before, the concern there, of course, is that basically what that means is like, just, you know, get going and do more with less and just like each other. Kumbaya. Right. Tell happy stories, that kind of stuff. Now, I don't think I think it would be a mistake to reduce what he's saying to that. But it's worth noting that that it's going to be a substantially different period of time, I think, in the state system of higher education. I'm going to leave that part at that. The one thing I would recommend, if anybody else is listening out here who's in ABSCUF or who's in the state system of higher education, I'd highly recommend this book called Winners Take All. Right? Book Winners Take All is basically it tracks a kind of a mode of approach of thinking that has become dominant, especially among the plutocrats and the elite, Silicon Valley and so on, about framing everything as this kind of win-win scenario, right? And basically the thesis of the book, right? And this comes out, I don't know the author's name right here, but the thesis of the book is basically the author had spent years interviewing and spending time with kind of some really kind of, you know, people at the top of their game, things like Bill Clinton and, you know, and people in the Gates Foundation and people in, you know, Silicon Valley. Hearing their discourse, right, and hearing how they're framing things and hearing what they want. And basically the big takeaway is always, you don't criticize the people who are the perpetrators, right, of the problem, right? You basically encourage the empowerment of the people who are being victimized in that system, right? So the idea is that you never call attention to the try to address systemic wrongs, right? You always kind of focus on individuals kind of like and their hopefulness moving forward. And I heard echoes of that in his discussion. So as I said to a group of my students who said, are you going to go to see the chancellor? I said, yes, I'm going to go there and map his discourse, right? Which is kind of what I did. So look, I do have to say, at least he's very much he's different in the sense that if finally we've broken the chancellor train from Florida, right, which has been kind of shipping up kind of right wing education destruction chancellors from Florida since Judy Hample through John Kavanaugh and to, of course, Frank Brogan, who's now in the Trump administration. So we'll see what happens here, folks. But, you know, be wary of the McDreamy. That's all I'm going to say. just not saying that he's done anything wrong yet. But kind of saying, don't let feel goodness let you kind of take your eyes away from kind of what the mission is here in higher education. So that's all I have to say. All right, John, anything else for our PA focus of the day?
That is it. I am good. I just saw a good tweet.
Yeah.
The Jess King campaign.
Yeah.
Has 999 people signed up for 2,100 canvas shifts.
Wow.
Over the next 4 days.
Wow. That's nuts.
Put that in perspective.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, so I didn't really tell us a lot, but I interviewed for a job with them over the summer. Unfortunately, I did not get it. you know, made to the final round of the interview. But even over the summer, they were doing this. They had like over, they had close to like 100 college interns just knocking on doors over the summer every day. So, I mean, if any, just having a slight glimpse inside this campaign and how it's ran, knowing the people and being friends with everyone who's running it, this is something that they said during the job interview, like, we're going to win this.
Yeah. Like, I remember you saying that. Yeah.
Like, this is how they're speaking and this is how they're acting and running. And yeah, this is one of the best campaigns that's probably that's ran all year.
Man, I hope they keep it up. I hope they win it, man. That would be so huge if she wins. But crazy. All right. Well, there you have it. So this is the end of our Pennsylvania focus here. As you can tell, I'm just running on steam at these days. Running on fumes, I should say. Running out of steam. Running on fumes. I'm mixing my metaphors too as well. But so crazy. All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and we'll be right back with today's Let's Go. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Let's go! And it is, we kind of got a short one today, I think. I've got no space news. I actually have a lot of space news, but I don't feel like talking about it. There's really interesting things happening in terms of kind of developments, in terms of acquisitions of different companies and things like this. Looking doing asteroid mining and all sorts of things like this. There's new moves about kind of moon colonization and I mean, it's just like it's crazy stuff has been going on the past couple of weeks. But energy has been on the midterms necessarily so. But at least we know that Sean will be spending a little time with Papa Joe this week.
Yes, I'm going to be spending time with Uncle Joe, Papa Joe. So Papa Joe is like a nickname that my dad has with my niece and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing Biden speak. I have not seen him speak yet. I'm not the craziest Biden fan. But I'm looking forward to seeing him speak.
So are you going there? Are you going to be taking pictures and stuff like that? Or are you just going to go?
Going to go, take pictures and rub elbows with the establishment and sell my soul and stuff like that.
Yep. Yep. I'm telling you, like, look, everybody, I'm just going to say, it's like, you know, Sean just may be a hot commodity after the election, you know, so you never know. So you never know. Sean might end up kind of being getting the call from Joe Biden to go out and plan his next political moves. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you never know. You never know. You never know. But cool. So I think that – so are you going to be posting up some pics and that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. Well, I'm looking forward to that. So follow Sean's Instagram page. That is kind of a necessary thing to do. Kitchen Snaps, right? Kitchen Snaps?
With Kitchen Dot Snaps. Kitchen, with a Z at the end.
Kitchen Dot Snaps with a Z at the end. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, we got one big news. I don't have a whole bunch. You know, I tell you what, I've been trying to catch up with a whole bunch of stuff at work, and so I've barely like had any beer for a while, and except last night. What's that?
Said better man than me.
Well, not that I haven't, but actually last night I picked up the New Belgium had like an IP. No, it was a Belgian double aged in oak casks. I forget exactly the name
of it. Have you had the Hempinator yet?
What's that?
Have you had the Hempinator?
No, I haven't. Have you had it?
Yes.
Is it good?
It smells like weed.
Does it?
Yes. It's okay. It's a novelty thing.
It's a novelty thing. Yeah. Well, there's actually, it's funny because that's apparently is one of these areas that they're with the legalization of marijuana in Canada. Right. And so it looks like some additional stuff that the beverage sector is the stuff, part of the stuff that's taking off. So I'm pretty sure it was Pepsi. Pepsi was looking to buy this one whole small startup that was doing stuff with hemp beverages. And that gives you an indication when you start getting that kind of money that's involved with it, that, you know, you can imagine like hemp based stuff being available at a soda machine near you. Right. So
I also know like hemp is actually legalized in Pennsylvania now, like hemp production.
Right.
So, I mean, again, a stupid plant that should have never been.
Right.
Criminalized, that has benefits. I'm not talking about marijuana, but we'll talk about marijuana. But
no, I mean, but I mean, like, I'm just like
the case for having legal hemp
rope and clothing and paper
and stuff like that.
It's, yes. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. You know, that's cool. So I had one of the, but it was funny because I had one. I had that last night because I was up doing laundry. I had to finish off some stuff from for work. And then I just had like news kind of playing in the background, and I had a beer, and it was like after like 1 o'clock, like when I was still working on stuff, and like now I'm actually tired today because of it. And it's like, it's one beer, so it just gives you an indication. But that hasn't stopped Free Will, of course, from churning out kind of new releases every single week, and I can't even keep up with them. I haven't even had them, half of them, but they have a new can release tomorrow that I want to plug. It is a Kiwi Kick Punch. That's the name of it. It is a triple IPA with kiwi, vanilla, and milk sugar. And it comes in at, wait for it, 12.6%. So it's going to knock your socks off. When I first saw this, I tell you, it's been funny because they have produced some awesome sours this summer. And I've got a bunch of them still, but I guess as we're the weather's starting to get cold and things like this, I'm losing my taste for them, like my desire to have them. And when I first saw this Kiwi Kick Punch, I thought, oh yeah, it's going to be another one of these kind of fruity ones, kind of light summery ones. But now I'm not so sure. When you look at kind of a triple IPA with that kind of thing, so I'm really curious about what that's going to taste like. But there's going to be 4-pack cans going to be available at both locations. So pick them up if you like it. Here is the description. It says kiwis are such particular little fruits that we just love them. Bright green, juicy, tart, slightly sweet, exotic. Seed-laden flesh is hidden away under brown, fuzzy, almost prickly exterior. Triple IPA will kick your tongue into overdrive with delightful kiwi tropic tartness, followed by a hop punch to the palate that highlights notes of honeydew melon, mango, strawberry, and then cradles your taste buds with a calming tinge of sweet vanilla. I would love, that's the job I think I would want, is to write these descriptions. It'd be funny. Reminds me of, did you ever watch Seinfeld?
Yes, I have.
Like the Jay Peterson catalog, right, that Elaine worked for?
I don't remember that one.
Oh, he was the guy that she worked for, and he always had these really elaborate descriptions of like how he came across this idea for this particular product and blah, 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 blah. Anyways, whatever. It's lost on you, I know. Yeah. Anyways, you got anything planned for the weekend?
No, just going to see Biden on Sunday. Then Tuesday, we're going to hit up a couple election parties.
Yeah, there you go, man.
Jess King and George Scott probably get some pictures and stuff like that.
Oh, very cool.
Drive around the area.
Well, cool. Well, everybody, I want to wish you all a good weekend. I get to go to a funeral this weekend, actually, which is, that's not my favorite thing in the world, but wish you the best of the weekend. And remember, if you can spare the time, you can spare the time, get out there, do some phone banking, get out with people, knock on doors. And most importantly, make sure that you get yourself, your family members and your friends get out to vote on Tuesday. It is probably one of the biggest midterm elections that you will have in your lifetime. So get out there and vote, vote, vote. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Hey, thanks for sticking with us today. We will be back once again next week to do the midterm election wrap-up. Until then, vote, 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 vote. See ya!